This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the August 1st edition of Invest Talk, Above Average Investing for the Average Investor. And we try to answer your questions live during the hour, this 1 hour, 4 to 5 Pacific time, Monday through Friday. Or you can leave your questions on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART. And we'll get to that in a moment. I'd like to get to all the calls. The NASDAQ is 12% above its 200-day moving average. These kinds of levels usually means a pullback. It's called reversion to the mean. Reading the signs, are tech stocks rising too fast? That's one of our talking points today. And I'm sure you have yours, and we'll talk about that. Just because the NASDAQ is 12% above its 200-day moving average doesn't mean anything is going to happen. It's just unusual. And we're talking about reversion to the mean. So that's going to be one of our talking points. Now let's check our 24-hour list line calls and see if we can answer a question.
Hi, Steve and Justin. I'm a longtime listener, and all this market uncertainty right now and anxiety is going on with the all-time highs. So I have a question about maybe having you guys manage my retirement portfolio, and I was wondering what is the minimum that you guys recommend of an account balance, be it $10,000 or $50,000 or $100,000 or more, before it's really worth it to have you guys manage my portfolio instead of trying to do it myself and having to study and do all this stuff I've been doing. So I anticipate your answer, and I appreciate all you guys do for all the listeners. Thank you. Bye.
Well, our usual minimum is $150,000, just so you know, but we take less. But there's a certain floor that you just can't manage it well because you need a certain amount of diversification. So you need a certain amount of money. We don't want the, it's because of the diversification issue, managing it properly. And remember, I put my money alongside yours, and everybody else is in the same program. So what we do is, if I buy 3% of a stock, and that's a normal allocation, you're going to have enough money to get an even lot of numbers of shares. Well, so our minimum published minimums are $150,000, but I've taken lower than that. I've taken much lower than that. But going anything below $50,000 is very, very difficult. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. If you haven't joined our Invest Talk Insiders, you might think about it. One of the many info sheets in our Insiders Library is about how to manage a bond portfolio. When interest rates eventually do rise, and they will, fixed income securities will decrease in value as they must over a discount to compete with new higher interest rates that are newly issued. So those old bonds that you're getting less interest for are competing with new bonds that you get higher interest rates for. So those old bonds have to sell at a discount. So you got to understand how those bonds work, how bonds work. And we do have an info sheet about that. If your portfolio objectives require fixed income securities, we would advise you ladder those bonds. Put them in a ladder. Diversify your bond purchases. Don't buy just one type of bond and then buy a ladder. Buy a bunch of different kinds. It's easy to do. Well, it may be difficult for you as an individual, but it's fairly easy to understand and implement if you have enough money. Anyways, do you got any questions about laddering a bond? I'd be happy to call. I'm happy to answer them. Call the number 888-99-CHART. You can get through right now. Bring your questions. Let's get back to the phones, okay?
Hello, this is Ryan from Pennsylvania. At your sort of request or suggestion, we're listening to reading Creative Destruction, and they talk very highly in one section of the book about Corning, which is GLW, and I know the book was written like 17 years ago or something, so I don't know if that was still a good company. In the book, they speak highly of them kind of being able to sort of reinvent themselves to keep up with changes in their industry, so I want to see if in the 17 years since Creative Destruction was written, if you think they're still good at doing that, if you think it's a company worth buying, and owning, and if it's a good price right now. I know it just dropped almost like 10% in the last few days or weeks. So again, GLW, wondering what your thoughts are. Thanks.
GLW, Corning Inc. And Corning, years and years and years, 17 years ago plus, they used to make dishes. Remember that? Dishes. Kind of Pyrex, kind of glass dishes. Then they had to metamorph themselves in, and they were making glass fiber optics. Very different from dishes, but still glass. Today, they make glass substrates for LCDs, optical fiber cables still for the communications and ceramic pollution control products. That's what they do. They're a $26 billion company. And they're growing their sales, their earnings, 8, 9, 10%. They're growing their sales from 16 to 12% per quarter. So they're still a very good company. They still are. They're going to make $1.86 next year, 2018, and it's a $29.52 stock. So that tells you that it's pushing about, 16 PE or so? It's a five-year range, is 10 to 19, so it's not cheap, or neither is it expensive. The things I don't like about it is the return on equity is not great at 10%. It's just not. It's good, but it's not weak. They don't have a lot of debt, which is good. They have good cash flow, and they pay a decent amount of dividend, 2.1%. So you want to buy it on a pullback. It's pulled back from 32 down to 29 in the last 4 or 5 days. So you want to let this settle down. If this is where it's going to settle down, you might want to pick it up at this price. That wouldn't be a bad thing. I'd be much more comfortable in the 25, 27 range, somewhere in there. 26.76 is the 200-day moving average. I'd be more comfortable buying it there. But you may not get there. Don't know. Let's go to Mike in San Jose. How you doing, Mike?
Good, Steve. Thank you for taking my call. I was wondering what your opinion might be for OCLR, please.
Okay, OCLR, everybody. That's Oclaro Inc., O-C-L-A-R-O, Oclaro Inc. It is a $1.6 billion company, so it's a small cap company, growing fast and accelerating its sales pretty decently in the recent quarters. And they made money for the first time in 2016, 17 cents a share. This year they're going to make 76 cents a share, and next year 74 cents a share. So 76 cents, and about a 14 PE with a stock price of a little under $10. So that's not too bad. That's not bad at all. Return on equity is 12%, a little bit on the weak side for a high-growing stock. You would want it to be higher. Not a lot of debt, but some. Mutual funds are buying. 100 new mutual funds were added this year in the last 12 months. So mutual funds are pushing this stock. What do? They manufacture transmitters, modulators, receivers, transceivers, laser chips, and amplifiers used in optical networks. So that's what they do. And it looks like it's a pretty successful company, Mike. Still fairly small, but growing its sales fast, which means it deserves a higher PE. Now, if it can keep that up, this stock's going to turn out to be cheap at this price at $9.90. It can keep its sales growth up. It's going to be cheap. It really is a great, attractive buy, about $8.25. Here it's kind of in the middle because it's been as high as $11 and now it's $9.90, so it's kind of in the middle. So I'm not sure if I'd buy it here. I'd wait for either a pullback to where I suggested, $8.25, or a breakout above $11. It's kind of in the middle right now. Okay, Mike?
Okay, great. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Good, solid company. Good, solid company. Just looks like it's starting to take off. Maybe it's a buyout candidate because it's not that expensive. Someone come in and buy it all. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley. We're live 4 to 5 Pacific time. Let's talk about your money. Need some help slapping a retirement investment plan together? Let's talk about it. 888-99-CHARGE, how you can get through.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Sean from New York. enjoying your podcast shows. I have a question about when companies, especially big ones, have a split in their shares. Is it fair to assume that when they become undervalued all of a sudden and it's a good time to buy, or there are other things that one has to consider after each split? Waiting to hear your comments on that. Thank you very much. Bye.
Now, a stock split really doesn't tell you it should be be a buy or a sell. It doesn't do either one. Even though most people, the assumption when a stock split happens is that it's good. Well, it's neither good nor bad, but since so many people think it's good, it generally helps push stock price higher. But that's not, it has anything to do with the fundamentals or the company itself, nothing. It has nothing to do with it. It's just a perception of something that's good. Because you went split for two for one, you had 100 shares, now you have 200 shares, but you haven't at half the price it was the day before a split. So you didn't bet it yourself. So you'd look at different things. What the company's growth rate, its earnings, its debt, all those other fundamental things is why you want to buy or hold on to a company, regardless of whether it splits or not. That has nothing to do with why you would want to buy it. Reading the signs, are tech stocks rising too fast? That's one of our talking points today. Also want to talk about Boeing. Boeing. Usually I don't talk about individual stocks, but I think it's important to talk about Boeing in the context of the Dow reaching new highs. Greenspan. Remember Greenspan? The formal Federal Reserve Chairman many years ago. Stresses ominous worries about the bond bubble. What the heck is he talking about? So I want to discuss that. And I also want to take a look at the market's overall health. The pluses and minuses of the market's overall health. Those are the issues I'm going to talk about today, but of course your issues are first, whatever you want to talk about. The Dow, the market was up, Dow up 73, the Nasdaq up 15, the S&P up 6. So you're right, making new highs or getting very close to new highs. You know, so the question is how long can they keep it up? Can it do it for more and more weeks? That's really the question. How this current run we have in the market, how long is it going to last? And I mentioned the other day, and I'll mention it again, are you even taking a look at the transportation index and thinking about the Dow theory? I take a look at the transportation index, so you could do that by looking at IYT on a chart, IYT, and compare that with the Dow, and then look at the Dow theory. Something's not right here. Doesn't mean the market's going to fall, but it does mean there's something that's not quite right. Here's an investor term you should know. What is par value? P-A-R, par value. That's the face value of a bond. Par value for a share refers to the stock value stated at the corporate charter. Par value is important for a bond or a fixed income instrument because it determines its maturity value, as well as the dollar value of the coupon payments. Par value for a bond is typically $1,000 or $100. $1,000 or $100. Shares usually have to no par value or very low par value, such as 1 cent per cent, 1 cent per share. The market price of a bond may be above or below par, depending on the factors like interest rates. To see more in depth the definition, just go to Investopedia. Investopedia, par value. So you buy a bond above par or below par after it's already in the market. You buy it at par when they first issue it. This is InvestTalk. I'm Steve Peasley. Give me a call, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Clay from Maryland. First off, thanks for your program. I think it's a great mix of education and individual stock analysis. So my question is a two-parter. First off, can you please take a look at EPD? That's Enterprise Product Partners. After that, can you please use EPD as an example for this dividend reinvestment question? How do you calculate in reinvesting dividends into your total return projections for a stock? So using EPD, for example, they have a 6% yield while it's been moving rather sideways. How would I estimate what my return would be if I were to reinvest the dividends? I've used a drip calculator online, but I was hoping for some insight from you. Thanks again. Listen to you on the podcast, and look forward to hearing the answer.
Well, it's kind of difficult, to be honest. EPD Enterprise Products Partners, they are an MLP, Mastered Limited Partner. Whenever you hear that term, Mastered Limited Partner, you immediately should think of is what kind of the tax treatment is the dividend? Is it different? You know, so it's a Mastered Limited Partnership. Are you going to get a K-1 at the end of the year, even if you bought that in your IRA or 401k IRA? If you bought that in there, are you going to be taxed or not taxed? Mastered Limited Partners, you could be, if you get a K-1, even in your, you have to pay taxes on your dividends. Okay, so you got to check with your account. Anyway, it's an MLP engaged in natural gas, liquid fractionation, transportation, storage, import and export, and terminaling natural gas. So they're going to make $1.41 this year, $1.56 next year. That means that the stock at $27 is selling for about, oh, what, 15 plus, about 20, 21, 22, 20, 21, 22. The five-year range is 14 to 28, so it's kind of right there, and a little bit on the higher end. Return equity is 12, but it pays a 6.2% dividend, and that's the main reason why you're buying it. Now, he was asking, well, how do I figure out my cost basis when I reinvest the dividend? And that's really what you're asking. How to figure out the cost basis? Well, you get out the math. Because if you take the dividend and you made, you know, $342 in dividend and you bought some shares with that dividend and there's shares at $27, how many shares did you buy? Did you buy 22, 23 shares at that price and you already have 200 shares at a different price? You got to do the math to get your average cost basis. That's how that works. Now, these days, when you do sell those the company, your custodian has to provide the math if you reinvested the dividend. So it gets difficult. Okay, I'm just telling you, it gets mathematically difficult. That's one of the reasons why I don't reinvest the dividends, by the way. I like to know exactly what my cost basis is at the time I buy it. When I get the dividends, I go look for something else to buy. That's how I do it. EPD, everybody. Good dividend payer. Probably going to continue. I don't, you know, paying that 6%, I think that's very doable on $27 base, making $1.56. Okay? 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Okay, a widely followed signal on Wall Street shows tech stocks are rising too fast. Well, are they rising too fast? And this article is talking about RSI, Relative Strength Indicator. Relative Strength Indicator. And RSI, it's a pretty good indicator, and it tells you if the stock is overbought or oversold. That's really what it's for. When, you know, it runs from 1 to 100, the RSI number, and it ranges usually between 40 and 70. 70 being the top. As it goes up, it's indication of overbought. Then it goes down. Anything below 40 means it's oversold. It's just a technical indicator. And the problem is, in this article, he's pointing out that the NASDAQ Composite Index has a relative strength indicator of 99. And according to the author, he has not seen this in 20 years. Not sure if it's a historical high, but he hasn't seen it in 20 years. Relative strength indicator, everybody. And so it's very, very high. And it's one of the little indicators of trying to raise that little red flag. Remember I talked about red flags and what are some of the red flags that we see? And I said that the Dow theory with the transportation index going down and the Dow going up, that's kind of a little red flag. And here's just another one raving in the air saying that market looks overbought. Now, should you react to it? If you're a long-term holder, you do not react to it. You just ignore it because you're in it for the long haul. If you're looking at a little shorter, you know, when the next year or two or three, you're going to have to start getting a little bit more cautious because you're approaching retirement or you just want to be, then you do look at these things and these opportunity to maybe move some of your assets to the sidelines. Please don't sell all of it because no one knows where the top is. No one has a bell to ring. There just no, you just don't. So just what you do is you say, okay, take some off the table. Some. And then as it keeps going up, if it does, take a little bit more off the table. Take a little bit more off the table. That's how you do it. Stay with us for part two of the Tuesday Invest Talk, everybody. I'm Financial Advisor Steve Peasley, and you can reach me right now. Our number is 888-99-CHART. Robbie is in Santa Clara. We'll talk to him next. Then, of course, you.
Our Invest Talk podcast continues next. But first, a couple of words about our webinar coming up May 31st. Licensed real estate agent and investor Chevy Akerson joins InvestTalk's own financial advisor and licensed realtor Justin Klein for 1 hour about real estate. And they'll show you the things you need to know to be successful, the basics of residential real estate investing. It's a free live webinar May 31st, 6:30 to 7:30 Pacific Time, with plenty of time for your questions, too. Learn about the tools and strategies the professionals use. Gain insights to help you reduce risk and maximize your invested dollar. Whether you're just getting started or currently own rental properties, this webinar will shed light on how professionals look at investing in real estate. The Basics of Residential Real Estate Investing, a free live webinar, May 31st, 6:30 to 7:30 Pacific Time. All you do is register. Just go to investtalk.com. That's InvestTalk with two T's. InvestTalk.com and click on the InvestTalk tab. Now let's continue with the podcast. Let's get back to Invest Talk. Financial advisor Steve Peasley is ready for your money question. Our direct line, 888-99-CHART.
Okay, let's go talk to Robbie, who's been very patient. Appreciate it waiting, Robbie. Thank you.
Hi, Steve.
Hi, Robbie.
Hi, this is regarding the stock Altria Group, the symbol MO.
Okay. What about MO? What do you want to know?
I already bought some stock.
Uh-huh.
After it has a bottomed out on the news for FDA. So most of the tobacco stocks were down a couple days back.
Right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So what is the future prospects? Oh.
Well, Philip Morris, Altria Group, it used to be the old Philip Morris, and then they split Philip Morris and Altria. Altria Group is headquarters in Richmond, Virginia, manufactures cigarettes and other tobacco products, mainly sold under Marlboro and Black and Mild names. They're going to make $3.28 this year. They'll make $3.56 next year. Their sales growth is pretty flat. They're having trouble growing, which you could expect with cigarettes being, everybody hates them. I don't like them either, by the way, just so you know. But The problem you have here, even though it fell sharply recently, it's still not cheap. If the stock is selling at $65.50, and it's going to make $3.56. So, that's, a 19 PE? And the range, five-year range, is 14 to 25. So it's right kind of in the middle. But it has a very good return on equity, 76%. And they pay a 3.7% dividend, and that's the reason why you buy it. You really want to buy it for the dividend, so you want to buy it cheap to get the best you can. But you're not really buying it cheap here, Robbie. It's not really inexpensive yet. Now I don't know if it ever will get inexpensive, but it's a good long-term play for the dividend. They've been paying that dividend forever and have very good return on equity. Don't expect it ever to grow. I like to buy this kind of stock when there's a recession. To be honest, because they get killed the dividend goes up to 6 or 7%, no one likes them, then you can get really good bargains. But I don't know when the recession's going to come. There will be. One will come someday. But it's a really good, solid company. I can tell you that. Robbie, I appreciate the call. Thank you very much. And that was M-O was the symbol. M-O, which Altria Group, by the way. Okay, 888-99-TAR. You want to know another little red flag, by the way, that's out there? Another little red flag. We talked about, and I pointed out two RSIs, one of them, very, very high. And then you have the Dow theory with the transportation index falling while the Dow stocks are moving up. And how about we are at the highest equity percentage ownership by households since 1999. So a lot of people are in the market with their money. That's about 40%, something close to that range, somewhere around there. Highest level of household ownership in stocks since 1999. Just pointing it out. That's all. Greenspan stresses ominous worries about bond bubble. Haven't heard anything about bond bubble, have you? So what happened is recently, the Federal Reserve Vice Chairman, current Vice Chairman Stanley Fischer, gave a 22-page speech trying to explain that the global interest rates appear stuck at historical low levels even as the U.S. Central Bank is tightening money supply. And he's not happy about it. He's worried about it. A few hours later, Alan Greenspan, who was the former Fed Chairman, said essentially telling him not to worry about it. The former Fed chairman said the low level of rates won't last, and when they move, they are likely to move reasonably fast. Okay, we are experiencing a bubble in the stock prices, but not in stock prices, but in the bond prices, he said. We are experiencing a bubble not in stock prices, but in bond prices. And he thinks this is going to lead to stagflation. A lot of you younger people probably never experienced or ever heard of stagflation. Me and the older crowd, we know what it was. Remember in the 1970s? It's just right when I got out of college. I remember stagflation. That means the market is not growing and we have inflation. Prices, it's not a good economic situation to be in. Anyways, Greenspan also said that normal interest rates have always been hovering around 4 to 5% range. So that's what he's worried about. Now, I just want to point out that in 1998, when he was the Federal Reserve Chairman, he made a famous statement saying that the stock market is irrationally exuberant. And then the stock market went on for two more years going up. Up big, too. The dot-com bubble. So, and Greenspan has been worried and concerned about low bond rates for quite some time. So this is not really anything new from him. So I don't know how much you could take that and say, oh, I'm going to worry about it. It's a worry. Another little green flag, a red flag out there maybe. I have flags that are not red, by the way. They're waving also. I'm going to get to those before the end of the show. Sometimes your home just doesn't meet your needs anymore, and you find yourself asking, should I move? Or can I remodel and make my home functional again? Why not pose your question to our own in-house licensed real estate consultant? Just go to investtalk.com and click on Contact Justin. This is Invest Talk, and we're here for your questions at 888-99-CHART.
Did you know that when you roll over your 401k, after-tax contributions can only be rolled into an IRA or a retirement plan that keeps track of the taxable and non-taxable parts? Maybe you better talk to the 401k rollover experts at KPP Financial. They'll help you make the best possible choices for your situation. Just click on Contact Steve or Justin and type in 401k rollover on investtalk.com.
Hi, this is Nick. I had a question about Phillips 66. I'm up about 15%. I know oil hasn't made a big recovery. Don't see it doing much in the short term. Wanted to kind of get your feeling about whether I should sell or just hold on to it. Thank you.
Okay, Phillips 66, symbol PSX. Isn't this a stock that Warren Buffett bought about a year plus or so ago? He added it to his portfolio? I believe it was. I'm pretty sure it was. Phillips 66 engaged in refining, marketing of oil and gas and petroleum photochemicals. Okay, they're going to make $4 per share this year after making $2.82 last year. And then they're going to make $5.77 next year. Those 2 years, by the way, this year and next, that's about a 40 to 45% increase each. The stock is selling for $85.63. So what is $5.77 as a P.E. ratio? What does that come to? Okay, and you're talking, what, 15, 16 P.E.? And the five-year range is 5 to 33. So it's not cheap and it's not expensive. Earnings have been doing quite well in recent quarters after a year plus doing poorly. So the earnings have finally turned around. They have some debt, but not a tremendous amount of debt. They have a poor return on equity of 7%, but a pretty good dividend at 3.3%. So when the stock was trading in the mid-70s, there was a lot of insider buying. But at 85 right now, there isn't. So I think that you, and it had a really good day today, up 2.24%. I think you might be a little late to the party because it's just coming up against resistance now, about $87 a share. I would not buy here. I would not sell here. If it doesn't break through the 87 and it starts to roll over on you, I'd probably take some profits off the table. That's what I'd probably do because coming up right up against resistance, you have 15% profit. There's never anything wrong with taking profits. Nothing wrong with that. 888-99-CHART. So what is the health of the overall market? Why has it been going up? Well, we have been having very good earnings. Have you noticed? The quarterly earnings, you know, the dance we do every quarter. And even after hours today, Apple reported earnings and blew them out. So Apple is up 5% after hours. So earnings, update economic forecasts and update and earnings looking to be strong and maybe getting stronger. Why shouldn't the market go up with that? And August is usually a positive month. Did you know that? August is usually a positive month. Usually. July and August tend to be positive. And I've told you over and over and over, there's usually a correction in the summer and there's usually a rally in the summer. Well, our correction came in June and it was in the form of 3% or so. Pretty small. You almost can't call it a correction. You know, you can't. But that's all you got. So now you could have another, August could be good. However, there's issues out there. I mentioned all the little red flags. The one I did not mention was what's going on in Washington, D.C. It does seem like it's a pretty much dysfunctional Congress and a presidency that seems to always be in hot water. So nothing getting done. The Obamacare thing didn't get repealed and replaced. Now they're going to be looking at, remember, Congress goes away for the month of August. They're off for the month of August. They're going to do nothing. So August is going to be on its own. When they come back in September, are they going to tackle the tax and infrastructure spending, the tax reduction? Are they going to get it done? See, the market will eventually start worrying about that. When will it happen? I don't know. So right now, the market is overpriced. There's a number of red flags flying around, but there's some green flags too. Not all worrying. There's some worries, but not all worrying. So that's kind of what's going on in the market, the economy. So don't panic, but, you know, it never hurts to have some cash on the sidelines and be impatient. Let's get back to our 24-hour listen line and pick up another question. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
This is Scott from Denver. Hey, I've got a question about investment property. I was going to change my investment property and add my wife's name to the title. And when I was going about to do that, someone had recommended to me that I put the investment property in a trust. And when I started to look at it, there were several options, S-Corp, LLC. And I was just wondering, based on your previous experience in rental properties, which one probably works the best for you? And if you can't give me really a definitive answer of either one, maybe some advantages and disadvantages of the options that are out there. Thanks. Looking forward to your answer.
Well, each state has its own rules and regulations that you have to kind of look into. LLC is a limited liability corporation, is a good way to, you know, try to shelter your personal assets from, you know, anybody trying to come after you on your rental property. You know, someone slips and falls and breaks their neck, you know, they're going to sue you. Now, you also can do, you also protect yourself, and it's more important to protect yourself with insurance, and then maybe umbrella insurance on top of that. They have plenty of insurance on these rental properties, so you can be, so you can protect yourself. That's the easiest way to do it. Putting in your wife's name, to me, that's not really helping you much. I'd rather see you form a S corporation or an LLC. An LLC is probably simpler, but I'm not sure what Colorado law says about that and how much sheltering, how well it works there. Might want to call an attorney and ask the question. We're, you know, it's not my expertise, even though I own rental properties. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. I have an email question here. Actually, it's a two-part question. I don't know if your podcasts have covered this topic, by the way, which we have. If you did, please refer me to which podcast. I don't know which one. Number one, my employer matches 401k, 4%. That's great. But he doesn't have a Roth 401k offering. And so the question is basically asking, should I contribute to my 401k, regular 401k, or should I open up an IRA, a Roth IRA, and contribute to that? What should I do? And my answer is both. It depends on how much money you can put away. Can you max out your 401k? And how much money do you make? I like having both a Roth, if you're a young person, a Roth and a regular retirement account. Roth, remember, is not tax-free, the money you put in. A regular IRA or regular 401k is. That money is not taxed that you put in, no income tax. So I like them both because at the end of the day, when you do retire, you can take one or the other because money coming out of the Roth is never taxed. So all the growth is never taxed. So the younger you are, the better it is. Money coming out of your regular IRA or 401k when you retire, that is added to your income that year, and you're paying income tax on it. But on Roth, you don't. So that's why I like having both, especially if you're a young person. You have advantages us old people didn't really get. We didn't get that. We didn't have that kind of Roth thing. That's, you know, fairly new, was it? 10 years old? I don't know how many years, but it's not, you know, that's not that old when you talk about retirement savings. You're listening to Invest Talk. We'd love to hear from you before the hour is up. 888-99-CHART. We'll try to get your question in, I promise. 888-99-CHART. We're going to talk to Veronica in the Bay Area. How you doing, Veronica?
Hi.
Thanks
for taking my call.
Thank you.
So I'm just wondering, would you recommend minors to be beneficiary of the IRA accounts, or do you have different recommendations?
Do I recommend an IRA account? Is that what you asked?
Yes.
Do you have a 401k or a 403b or a 457 at work?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so are you already are you already contributing to it, and is your employer matching your contributions?
No.
They're not matching?
They're not matching.
Okay, then I would rather you put money in an IRA because you have much better, usually, you have much better choices. You can buy whatever you want. Go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. The question was, would you recommend beneficiaries?
Oh, I'm sorry. Oh, okay, beneficiaries. Well, whenever you have a retirement account, you always have a person listed as a beneficiary. Not your will, not your trust, but a person. Because what happens if you, when you die, that money immediately goes to them instead of going through probate or the process of your will being administered. So I always name the person individually who you want to inherit your IRA. And you can name multiple persons, Veronica. You can say, I want 50% to go to this person and 50% to go to that person. You can divide it any way you want. But always name individual people.
But is there a problem if you name a minor to be a beneficiary?
If you name a what as a beneficiary?
A minor.
A minor. Yes. No, there's no problem. No. Now, the minor will have a guardian, and that guardian will take care of that inheritance. But, no, you can name the minor. You can name your children or your grandchildren. Nieces and nephews, anybody you want. Okay, Veronica, thank you for the call. I appreciate it. Thank you. Boeing helps blue chip index soar to new heights. I find this fascinating. I'm sure most of you have experienced that you haven't gone up as high as the in July as the Dow did. Well, Boeing Corporation's in the Dow, and it represented 50% of the move up in July for the Dow 30 Industrial Index. So if you didn't own Boeing, you owned all the other 29 in the index, but not Boeing, you would have gone up 50% of what the index went up. Boeing contributed that much to the index in July. And that's not on you. What's a little bit worrisome here, the lesson to take away here is the market is, it can be very narrow like this. That means even though the indexes could be moving up, unless you own the index, you most likely will not move up if the market is narrow in its movement. And the market is pretty narrow. It's not really broad based as you think it might be. The tech stocks, big tech stocks, have resulted in a big push up this year. If you didn't own those big tech stocks, you're doing as well. Boeing, just the one darn stock for July, one, represented 50% of the move. So it's one of the good reasons to be an indexer, passive investing in the index, because you'll get a benefit from all of those stocks. The detriment for that is when the market corrects, you go down. The opposite could happen. Market could correct, but one or two of the big Dow stocks could be crashing, and they'll pull you down faster than you could believe. So it works both for you and against you. But I thought it was very interesting for July that Boeing, because this is unusual for Boeing. Boeing usually doesn't do this. Represent 50% of the move up in the index for July. Boeing. Interesting, isn't it? Meanwhile, think about this. The transportation index has been falling for about a month. And Boeing's one of the components of it. Time's up for the hour. I have a new day for my next visit to San Jose for individual portfolio reviews. But we can do it together if you like. I'll be in San Jose all day on the 23rd of August. To reserve your hour with me, just go to investtalk.com and click on portfolio review. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, president of KPB Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Justin Klein and the whole KPB family, thanks for being with me today. I appreciate it. Let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.
InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.